Yo, my man Fife Diggy, he got something to say.
I like him brown, yellow, Puerto Rican.
Live and direct from the 718. What's going on, everybody? It's another episode of the Global Citizen Podcast with your boy Joel. Hope everyone's doing well. Today, we have a very special guest, a good friend of mine. Casey Gay McCullough is a journalist and a rapper born in Cambridge, Massachusetts. He then took on the name Mighty Casey. Being born to a South African mother and Jamaican father, he quickly became interested in global politics and history, which he studied at Columbia University here in New York. He's a former staff writer for News One, and he has covered a wide variety of subjects from music, politics, drugs, and organized crime. Inside the CIA Secret War in Jamaica is his first book, after researching its subject matter for 3 years. Besides writing, Casey is also involved in the fields of music, technology, and filmmaking. And he is a founding partner in the GIF-based music video generator startup, MVGEN. I hope I pronounced it right. I hope it's just the letters. And he is the owner of the Phoenix Rising Records, which is distributed by Sony, and the creator of the pioneering hip-hop comedy web series. That's what's up. Casey, welcome to the Global Citizen Podcast.
Oh, I'm honored to be here, Joel. Thanks so much for inviting me.
My bad for the delay.
All good. You made it under 30 minutes, so it's acceptable under CP time.
It is acceptable under CP time. How you doing, man?
I'm pretty good.
I'm doing a lot of back and forth, trying to get you on, and then finally at a Halloween party when I went as Jesse Pinkman.
Breaking Bad.
Yeah, Breaking Bad with my girl.
I think we
solidified it.
Yeah, three people thought I was Drake, but I just went as myself.
Are you supposed to be Drake? Like, no. What do you think, since I consider you to be kind of, in your own right, a hip-hop connoisseur, I would say music, but what, leaning more towards hip-hop and jazz and reggae, or which would you pick if you had to choose only one as a superpower?
I guess I have most of my background in hip hop, but I guess recently I had the band I think I like reggae the most in terms of a long term art form. I don't know if I have like the talent for melody that's kind of necessary for the type of reggae I like, and then you know I'm also a bit of a jazz pianist, but there's a lot better jazz pianist to me, so I'd say hip-hop, but definitely the reggae and the jazz are huge influences on the hip-hop music.
Yeah, of course.
I make, yeah.
So what do you think of Drake, man? He's pretty much the hottest game in town right now.
Man, yeah, I mean, I think he kind of won me over. I used to be a bit of a hater, you know, cause I guess it's like biracial self-hatred and you don't want to see
another guy come up.
Yeah, but yo, with Hotline Bling and Back to Back, he's kind of had like the two singles, which were like the one hardcore diss record and the one love song of like the year, and he's definitely solidified himself in like music history. And I mean, I would like to see a little more like substance, you know what I'm saying? I like to see him a little more, he has a lot of people listen to him. He could, make a political statement or something like that. But in terms of just straight music, melody, flows, he's pretty good. I can't hate him anymore.
Yeah, I can't hate on him either. And he does such a good job of making fun of himself that you can't, it's like the what Eminem did in 8 Mile.
Exactly.
He just calls himself out.
The Hotline Bling memes were hilarious, and he knew that was going to happen. And that's a great way in the new music era, is that you want people to be not just listen, but like now music is like an interactive experience. So you don't just listen, you post a meme, you have a caption, you know what I'm saying? So that's kind of what we're doing with MB Gen, because I think we're in an era where, music is not just a one-way experience. Like, you get involved with the artist, you're involved them through social media, you post their videos on Instagram, but you could change it a little, so it's kind of like your creation as well as theirs, and then you have a vital aspect. And he's really great with that, and I think he understands the way the web works, and yeah, not taking himself so super seriously where you can't have a joke on him, but he still reverse the jokes and definitely, you know, we needed to make Mill was kind of like embarrassing. That was a fun 2 weeks in hip hop.
It was not for Meek Mill. It's a shame because I think Meek Mill's a pretty good hip hop artist, and it's just kind of ever since Back to Back came out, he's just been I don't know, just sitting in his own shit.
Yeah, he got Ja Rule'd a little. Maybe even worse than Ja Rule'd. I don't know. Yeah, like, Ja Rule finally is coming back now.
It's like reality show. 20 years later.
Yeah.
My God. So lately, I wanted to talk to you about this. The Source came out with their top 10 of all time. And
it's Billboard. It was Billboard.
Oh, it's Billboard. Okay.
Yeah. And one of my friends from college, Alex Gale, wrote that, actually, along with another writer. I forget his name is. And then J Electronica posted like, showing, you know, my friend Alex Gale is white, and he posted like the Alex Gale with his other white friend, and he said, these are the guys who wrote it, enough said about, and they just kind of like shitting on the Billboard. So they've been having like an interesting back and forth, and my friend Alex just posted J Electronica's picture with the Rothschild he was dating, and the Rothschild was like one of the old rich Jewish banking families that are often connected to the Illuminati, and J Electronica is like a big Farrakhan 5%er. He was for a while. I don't know if he's still dating this kind of this rich Illuminati white Jewish lady. But I kind of know what they were going with on the list, because being a writer for a long time and writing so many lists, like you're kind of told, you if you have a list, you always want to leave someone off who should be on it and put someone on who shouldn't, because that creates discussion. And I think Billboard did a great job with that list, in that it's caused so much, you know, controversy. And then the Game just posted another top 10 list, and everyone has their own opinions on it, because, you know, they left off Tupac and they put in Lil Wayne and they put in, you know, Kendrick Lamar. And as great as Lauryn Hill is, she's a Columbia classmate of a love mine, she only has you know, one album, and she had, you know, great Fugees. She had, you know, part of a group. But it was good to see her as a female on the list. But it's definitely not my list, you know, and I don't even know if anyone on that list, because I made my own list and pasted it on Facebook. A lot of people have done that too, so, you know, kind of.
But also, own. It also ages everyone a little bit, you know. Certain people who are missing from there. For me, like, my biggest omission was KRS-One. I don't know how he wasn't on there.
Yeah, KRS-One's definitely on mine.
And then for me, just like, you know, I got into a discussion with my cousin about it, actually my cousin's girlfriend, and they're about, you know, they're not that much younger than me. They're about like 6 years younger than me. And I was like, there's no way Kendrick Lamar should be on that list. And I like Kendrick. I think Kendrick.
Yeah, I like Kendrick. And there's been a big talk. And this is like when there was all that hype over To Pimp a Butterfly, I was not like all caught up on the bandwagon. And I think like, the album really hasn't kind of stood the test. I just saw Kendrick Lamar live, and it wasn't that good. I like everything he stands for, but I just never got too into him. You know, I want to be, but it's like his music doesn't really do much. I like the other album more than this one. I think this album is like, sometimes when you get creative and jazzy or something like that, like, it just, and then all the smart people, they want to be like, yeah, I like this because it's different, but it's not enough to be different. So that's good.
I mean, I don't know. To Pimp a Butterfly was good, but I don't think it was as amazing as everyone put it out to be. It's very good, don't get me wrong, but I definitely prefer Section 80 and Mad Kid, Bad
Good
City.
Kid, Mad City,
good
yeah.
Good Kid, Mad City, I always flip that up. But to me, that was the biggest thing. And Lil Wayne, I think... That's a generational thing, and like, whatever. Not that... When Lil Wayne was big, it was like me and kind of like 3 years out of college, and then kids in college like loving the shit out of Lil Wayne.
Or
kids.
Yeah, he had a good mixtape period, and then I think it was maybe the Carter III or one of those albums.
Yeah,
like,
the Carter III
like,
was a great album.
And I mean, you got to give. I mean, he gave birth to Nicki Minaj and Drake, and you know, they definitely. But I think they've both kind of like surpassed him. And, you know, again, it's like he's a good punchline rapper, but, you know, I look for a certain amount of substance. And I don't know. He's, you know, I like some of his, like, guest appearances, some of his mixtape stuff. But he's definitely – I don't think he might not even make my top 50.
Do you think that he won't make your top 50?
No.
Wow.
I know. I've been listening to rap for a long time, so I have like I'm counting like I count like groups, so I'll count like Run and DMC and Pasta News and Fife and Q-Tip and like the whole Wu-Tang. And you know what I'm saying? Like the Alcoholics, the Far Side.
You have
like,
you have Master Killer over Lil Wayne.
I might have Master Killer. Definitely Capadonna over Lil Wayne. Maybe not You God. Lil Wayne might be like a notch above You God, but definitely not better than Raekwon, Ghostface, RZA, GZA, ODB, Meth. None of those guys.
Yeah, that would be a hard one to shake. But I understand what you're saying.
I don't think he'd be in my top 50 personally, because I've been listening to rap for 30 years.
But I think Lil Wayne is the childhood actor of rap. You know,
he's the Corey Haim.
Yeah.
Corey Feldman.
Pretty much. He got big so early, and I think he's kind of fizzling out just because he's wasting.
And drugs, too.
Yeah, he's like, wasting away is what I mean.
And, you know, all these drugs and the whole, like, I don't know, like, the whole Tidal thing kind of messed him up. He tried to go exclusively to Tidal with the last album, and, like, he's just having a little beef with Birdman. And I think the guy who shot up the bus, like, Young Thug's friend, just did, like, 20 years. Like, I think the Cash Money story might actually be better than the N.W.A. movie, so I really want to see it, like, 20 years from now.
Yeah, well, Cash Money, when that came up, that was crazy. That was high school for me, and we were all about Cash Money. Like,
it Ha was great. I loved Ha.
I mean, Juvie put him on the map. Him on the map, and they kind of just like forgot about him towards the end. But, Back That Ass Up, like you said, Ha, the Ha remix with Jay-Z.
Yeah, that kind of gave him like that East Coast credibility.
Let me ask you one more question about this top 10, and then you could just shoot out your top 10 real quick. I love Big, I really do. But do you think he is the best of all time?
Well, no. And he I mean, it depends on what you want as an MC. If your ideal MC is like a street savvy, great storyteller, gangster, and that's what you want out of MC, yeah. I think both him and Pac were kind of, you know, given extra points as martyrs. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I think if they would have lived on, I don't seem to have seen that. So I don't even think I had Big in my top 10. I think I wrote it out before because I think I wrote it out on Facebook. So I'll go look at it, see if I can find it on Facebook.
But
I have it on Instagram as well.
Right. But I see what you're saying, though. And Biggie came out with, what, two albums? And then there were
two albums, but he had a classic double album. That double album was amazing. And in terms of production, lyrics, and that is very rare. And even before that, he had a classic mixtape with Mr. C, which was like with all his guest appearances. And that's when I got into Biggie, actually, you know, before Ready to Die, off like the Supercat appearance. So a classic mixtape, a classic album, and a classic double album. And nobody has had a classic double album in hip hop. Not, you know, not Wu-Tang, not Tupac. You know what I'm saying? So, you got to give him a lot of credit. You know, great voice.
He's one of a
great
kind. Great storyteller. Especially that story I got to tell and about the.
Yeah, the Knicks. Who was Hubert Davis?
It was Hubert Davis.
Yeah. That's lots of research. Yeah.
How do you know that for a fact? They tried to get John Starks to...
John Starks was on it with my man Bomani Jones. And, I mean, he was 6'5". He was soft. He wasn't tough. Like, people thought it might be Anthony Mason, but I don't think. Anthony Mason was 6'5". I wouldn't fuck Anthony Mason, if she threw me the pussy.
get away from me! No,
I don't care if she was like, you know, Halle Berry in her prime. I'm not fucking with Anthony Mason. I would not want to. Even if I was, you know, Big and gangster. All right, so I found my top 10. Huge Tribe fan, so I gotta go with Q-Tip, like Low End Theory, Midnight Marauders, People's Instincts with Paz, like three of my favorite albums ever. Slick Rick, just off Lottie Dottie, and really one classic album with Great Adventures, and then a lot of, you know, other great songs going on even into the 2000s. We, you know, he had a great song with Mos Def, Auditorium. DMC, a lot of people might go with Run Over DMC. I just always like DMC more.
I met DMC at my old job one time.
Wow, he's from Queens. Really cool dude. He's Dominican. He was adopted. He didn't even find out he was Dominican.
He's Dominican?
He's Dominican.
Wow, there you go.
He grew up thinking he was black his whole life because he was adopted and he found out he was Dominican. Number four, KRS-One. That's an easy choice. Brilliant. Yeah.
Saw him live. That was great.
Nas, number five. You know, Nas is incredible lyricist. Illmatic is definitely one of my top five, top ten albums.
Yep.
Chuck D, great voice. Pause the News. De La Soul is one of my favorite rap groups ever. It's hard to choose between him and Dove. Like, I didn't want to put, like, Q-Tip and Fife and, you know, Pause and Dove. And then Slim Kid Trey from the Far Side. I shout out people I know, too, just, you know. Because once I got to, like, the 8 to 10, I was, like, it became, like, so... So, you know, if I know you and you're in, like, my 8 to 10 range, I'll just go with you over someone I don't know. So then Ed O.G., who I know, too, who's never really had a classic album, but a lot of great hits, and he's still been making music. And then, actually, I might be a little biased on this, but I really do love this album, even though I kind of put it out on my own label, Just the Facts, who's an album I just put out with Blue Buns. And I listen to the album all the time, not only because, you know, I get money when I stream it, but I really like it. And, you know, I'm only on four songs, so it's not like I'm biased for myself musically or biased for myself business. I could listen to it on mute and still get money off it. So that's my top 10. You know, it might change tomorrow, might change whenever. But, you know, there's other guys I really like Coogee Rap. Maybe like I'm trying to think who maybe GZA. GZA might be my favorite rapper out of Wu Tang, just off the intellectual quality of his music. But that's my top 10.
Oh, that's a very unique top 10. That's I definitely don't think that top 10 would be picked up by Billboard because
not at all.
Lot of those guys are really kind of folks they won't know off the top of their heads, would have to Google.
Yeah. That guru's up there. I think I also had top five dead MCs. There's so many, many great lists. Yeah.
Guru wasn't, he was from not too far from where I used to live. He was from Clinton Hill, I think.
No, he's from Roxbury, Massachusetts, moved to Clinton Hill. Yeah, he's from Roxbury. His father was a judge in Roxbury. He went to Morehouse. After Morehouse, I guess, to get his rap career started, he moved to Brooklyn, the Planet. And that's where he met up with Premier, who's actually from Texas. So, you know, even though they're like a staple Brooklyn rap group, neither Guru or Premier are actually from Brooklyn. They were original, like, gentrifiers, I guess.
They're the first people that started bringing white folks around Bed-Stuy.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, so, just a couple more stuff about music. So, do you think like your career was indicative of the music you were listening to? So you've been listening to music for, like you said, 30 years, but you've been producing music since like what, the early 2000s?
Early 2000s, maybe late 90s.
Late 90s. So whoever you were listening to at the moment, did you try to kind of modify your rap so you could sound like them a little bit, or were you always trying to do your own thing?
I think like some of the music early on, like definitely I was influenced by like De La Soul, Tribe Called Quest in the 90s, so the time I started making music. And then it's a real cool music renaissance coming on like out of Boston in like the late 90s, early 2000s. And like Eminem, I was listening to a lot. Eminem definitely with his sense of humor. But also like I'd be influenced by like comedians like, you know, Eddie Murphy, Ali G. So I took influences from like a lot of different places in music. So I kind of stopped like listening to like after Biggie died, and you have the kind of like the Diddy era. It wasn't really my type of thing. But then you had like the Raucous era coming up. So I really liked, you know, Mos Def, Talib Kweli. They were kind of come up around the same time. So I think it was kind of, yeah, definitely. Of course, the music I made was reflective of the music I listened to. I always was inspired by, like, humorous rappers like, you know, Biz Markie, Slick Rick. So they had like, a kind of big influence on what I did. Of course, like Run DMC. Yeah. So, yeah.
Do you, so I think the song that most people know you for is White Girls. Is that?
Definitely, of course.
Do you think so? For those of you who don't know, White Girls was, for me, I remember seeing it on BET Uncut. I remember seeing it also where they used to be, I think you were on the box once where you had to actually order
White Girls. Could have been the box and Video Music Box too, a few places. Music Choice.
Do you think that kind of White Girls became a blessing and a curse? A blessing in the sense that it kind of, it probably springboarded you where people were able to see that and then listen to your other music, or, and then a curse in the sense that, you know, most of the time, your music career is known for white girls.
It's a real tough choice. I can't really see what else, because I could say it as, you know, yeah, definitely like kind of pigeonholed me as like a, you know, funny, goofy rapper. And another aspect, I could think like, you know, maybe no one would have heard any of my music if it wasn't for white girls. So, and I see like you now in the digital era, I could see like, you know, what people listen to. So I'm always like checking my, seeing what's selling, seeing what's streaming, because, you know, in the digital era, everything is gray in real time. So I'm seeing, you know, it's maybe like 95% white girls, but people are still listening to my other stuff. And bring, and yeah, it's definitely opened doors for me to keep on putting out music, to have the deal I have with Sony right now, where I can put out albums to other people, because I have consistently sold music, even if it is one song,
right,
for the, you know, for the past, you know, 11, 12 years. So I don't know. It's really tough, because I can't say what would have happened if I didn't put out white girls. You know what I'm saying? I don't know which way my career would have went, because it's very hard to be like even a one hit wonder. Like, that's something like people could laugh at and say, oh, you're a one hit wonder. Like, do you know how many rappers would never even had close to a hit? Like, you know, if there's like 2 million people who try to rap, and you might get like, you know, 100, 200 people who actually have hits, like, you know, maybe like 50 people who have like good albums that people listen to. So yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I like to see what would have happened if I didn't. I would think, honestly, what would have happened was that I would have been like an underground, like MySpace rapper, with my friends listening to it, rather than, you know,
a national. And then
you do get like a trickle down too. So, you know, if you put out one song, they like it, people will check out the rest of your stuff. But now, in the kind of digital era, when people can just listen to one song, they're not going to, like, buy the album necessarily. Because I used to buy albums just if I liked one song. And, you know, a lot of times I buy, like, a horrible album.
I mean, that's what a lot of people did. You know, I used to buy tapes and then CDs. I mean, just like everyone else. Every Friday, the store The Wiz used to have $10 album days. Every Friday. And it could be one song and I'll just cop the whole thing. And the album could be garbage. But you just get to that number three.
Yeah.
The reason why I ask about the blessing and the curse is because I've seen your song. I've seen white girls come up in various different spaces. Like, for example, your song came up when I was watching porn, and I was like, "Yo, this is crazy."
Oh, that's crazy! That's hilarious. I never known that. I wonder if I get like digital revenue off that. I don't check that.
Should, because this website is crazy. You know, I mean, I feel like porn is a $1 billion industry. You should definitely tap into that. But that's what made me come up with the question: like, is it a blessing and a curse? Because for sure, people know you primarily through that, and then those that have, like, because I've seen you get awards on other types of sites.
Yeah.
So that means it's not the only thing people know you for, but I guess people who don't study hip hop, who don't, you know,
people aren't in the mainstream. Because I know I just saw, like, you know, Liquor Land 2, another song I did, just got mentioned by like this in this really popular Australian blog, and there was another. It was a Houston paper, and I always see, like, when, you know, the name, like, white girls is like Complex had it as one of their top 25 funniest rap songs of all time. But then I had another song, Crackhead Superheroes, which was
we don't need another superhero.
Yep, which was mentioned in the top 10 funniest rap songs on like it wasn't a site as big as Complex, but it was a reputable like Houston newspaper. So it's definitely a blessing and a curse. And I think, like, in the internet era, you kind of like realize it a little more when I see the YouTube. And even now, like, I'm getting like $1,000 checks just off like monthly YouTube views. Yeah, because people are still watching it a lot. So yeah, definitely, it's really hard to say. It's definitely I would have liked like more of a body of work. Cause I think more people, because like some people didn't understand it was like satire and parody, because they didn't have like a context of my work. Because I guess people who knew me, they knew, you know, I was joking around. But then in the context of like BET Uncut, where you're having a bunch of like ratchet, ignorant music, people might think, hey, this guy really likes white girls or something like that. So,
go ahead.
Yeah, no. So, you know, and the good thing about it is, you know, I'm still making music, and I still, you know, in the digital era, it's really easy to put out music, really easy to sell music, really easy to license music. So I'm still hoping to, you know, bring on to that legacy in terms of music and put it into a greater body. But you know, I guess it's been more of a blessing than a curse
for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty much, I would say 80% of your songs are very conscious, very politically conscious. You brought up the Crackhead Superhero song, and I think that's a perfect example. But it also kind of shows that you do have a background in politics, that you're very much aware of what's going on. You have your ear to the ground in, you know, anything ranging from race relations to, I guess, conspiracy theories. You kind of blog and write a lot about the CIA.
Yeah, definitely.
A lot of what they've done kind of like in-house, I guess, operations, namely dealing with JFK. Can you talk about like why where you found the interest? Is it because you're from the Boston area, Cambridge, or is it something that you just kind of started getting interested in by just doing your own research, or just something when, you know, if you were majoring in history at Columbia?
I think, yeah, a lot of it came from majoring in history and also being from Jamaica. My father being from Jamaica and me being interested in, you know, Bob Marley and his story. And I remember going to the Bob Marley Museum and them showing me, they say, hey, here's where Bob Marley was shot at. And he was shot, his manager was shot, and the CIA were the people who ordered it. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? I'm like, no, why would, you know, the American CIA want to shoot Bob Marley? They say, no, it's been proven. And that kind of always like stuck with me. So that was something like in college, I wrote a paper on, I think it was called The Eagle, The Bear and the Lion. And the eagle was America, the bear was Russia, and the lion was kind of like Bob Marley. And it was all about how Jamaica was kind of caught in the middle of the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just did cover a little bit of the CIA. And then after the whole Dudas thing came out in 2010, I wrote a really big news article.
Dudas was the basically the kind of drug kingpin of Jamaica that the CIA. So it happened in 2010 where they.
That was 2010.
Wow.
I don't know. Like the CIA
5 years? Jesus. Or the U.S. government.
5 years ago.
Well, yeah, the U.S. government at least.
Well, his father more. His father was Lester Lloyd Coke, Jim Brown, and his father they definitely supported in the 70s to fight against Michael Manley, who was like a kind of left-wing figure who was had close ties with Fidel Castro. And, you know, the CIA is having a big war against Castro since, you know, the early 60s. Several assassination attempts, several attempted coups, lots of acts of terrorism sponsored by the CIA against Cuba. So that's, I was always interested in that aspect. And then actually, so I met this guy, Paul Stewart. He's a music supervisor. And I, you know, I'd always try and send him music and stuff. And then he knew me as a writer as well. He said, you know, I have a new book company. Why don't you write a book? So that's when I started writing a book on inside the CIA, Secret War in Jamaica. So it really wasn't until then that I, you know, started researching a lot of these characters, like, you know, George Bush, who was the head of the CIA in 1976, and Luis Posada Carias, who was a Cuban terrorist responsible for bombing a Cuban airline, killing 73 people, lots of Castro assassination attempts, lots of other acts of terrorism in Cuba. So I started researching these people, and that's when I kind of got to JFK. I was never like a, you know, JFK, and I don't really like the term conspiracy theorist because I don't believe in theories. I believe in like evidence. So if I have a theory and I don't have evidence to back up that theory, I'm not going to discuss it. I'm not going to present it. I'm not going to write it.
Right.
But if I have, you know, a theory that is backed up by first person testimonies, government documents, patterns of government behavior, then I, you know, then and I believe I can come to logical conclusions that something happens, then I come to it. So, and it's been crazy with JFK because the mainstream media has been really ignoring a lot of the recent admissions. Like people are coming up saying, hey, I'm in the CIA, we tried to kill JFK. Another person will say, hey, I'm in the CIA, we tried to kill JFK. And the news never covers it. So it's only, you know, people like myself who really have to search for news, not the people who just watch like MSNBC, CNN for their news or right. Read the New York Times. They're not going to get it. But if, you know, if you really search and do your research, you will find out that, yeah, the CIA killed JFK. And there's a recent article by and book by, I forget it, I think his last name is Talbot, and he founded Salon, and he just wrote a book. I think it's called The Devil's Chessboard. And in that book, he kind of says, you know, Alan Dulles, who was the head of the CIA from, I think, 1955 to maybe 1962, after the Bay of Pigs, he was fired by JFK, that Alan Dulles was kind of, you know, being behind the JFK assassination. So, and then, you know, this isn't, you know, a tinfoil hat Alex Jones type person. This is a, you know, very reputable journalist. And there's lots of great books by not Alex Jones type people at all. These people are people who worked in the Nixon administration, like Roger Stone. These people are lawyers who worked for the American Congress, like Gaetan Fonzie, Mark Lane, you know, Jim Garrison, who they made the JFK movie about. So it's really interesting. And these same people became involved in like Iran-Contra. And then I think if you read Gary Webb's book, Dark Alliance, or see the movie based on it.
I saw that movie.
Yeah. So, but it was way worse than even what Gary Webb was saying. Like, and it goes even deeper to, you know, like, George Bush and his son Jeb. So I think it's kind of like with the Bill Cosby thing, because you have so many accusations, and one person you can say, oh, that person's just lying, he's trying to, you know, or he's trying to hate Bill Cosby or trying to tarnish his legacy, or you could say two or an attack their character. But there's so many accusations that all fit the same pattern of the CIA being involved in assassinations, from JFK to Lumumba.
I mean, there have been so many articles. I mean, it's kind of common knowledge now. You know, those folks who haven't read anything, you know, they'll really won't have much to say about it. But it's common knowledge. It's in, like, you know, Foreign Affairs magazine, the movie about Gary Webb, where he, quote unquote, killed himself by shooting himself twice in the head.
Yeah.
I find it hard to believe that a lot of people really aren't kind of opening their eyes to this. But I think one of the reasons, and you mentioned two things, is mainstream media and terrorism. I'm just going to jump to what's going on now, especially with the Paris attacks. So what I wanted to ask you is kind of a long-winded question, being that you're from Cambridge, and you're from a city that's been attacked by, has had their own terror attacks. You know, you've lived in another city, New York, that was also attacked. You know, at its core, the financial center. So you probably were working in 2001. I was a freshman in college. But what are your thoughts on what's going on right now? I mean, so you've seen it, you've lived it, I guess, in two different cities.
Yeah, I mean, I was lucky enough in 2001. I was working as a teacher in Boston, and in 2012 I was working in New York. So, you know, both times, and whenever you get these kind of situations, you always kind of, you know, even in Paris, like, you know, or you know, you worry about people you may know. So I, you know, I was 9/11, I was like, wow, you know, because I went to Columbia, so a lot of people, you know, from Columbia go on to work in finance. So I had this great feeling of, you know, oh, I'm so scared, I hope not. And one of my friend's wives, she worked at the daycare center at the World Trade Center. So, you know, just kind of having this great fear of one of your, someone you care about, someone you know, someone, you know, dying or being affected by these things. And, you know, in Boston, I used to go to school right there. And, you know, I have lots of friends who run. So kind of had this fear of what's going on. So I'd say, and how this relates to terrorism and Paris, is that most people in America just pay attention to the news in America. And, you know, maybe if something happens in London or Paris, but most people are not watching Al Jazeera or reading the international section of the New York Times. So most people weren't really even paying attention to what was going on in Afghanistan in the 80s with the CIA supporting Al-Qaeda and the Taliban and these Afghani fighters against Russia. So, you know, we weren't paying attention until those same fighters came back and allegedly, you know, it's still up for debate. I'm not a 9/11 truther, but I am, you know, I'm skeptical of anything the government says or does. Comes back to kind of haunt us, and so you have that. So then let's kind of fast forward to 2012. So this is really interesting for me because not only was the city I'm from, Boston, which I'm really from Cambridge, but you know, Boston, Cambridge, kind of same place. But the terrorists were from Cambridge, and I knew several people who knew them. And so when it happened, all these news came out from these guys from Cambridge. So, like, who did they know that I knew? It turns out that the older brother was best friends with someone who was really good friends with one of my really good friends. But that person, whose name was Brendan Mess, his friend Eric Wiseman, and another guy named Raphael Tekken, on 9/11 of 2011, so this might have been a year and a little bit before the bombing.
In Boston, yeah.
Yeah, they were, my friend was murdered, his throat was slit, and weed was thrown all over his body. And everyone thought it was like a drug-related crime, but then after, you know, and actually this is when I first found out that that the bombers knew my friend, you know, I called the FBI, I called the Cambridge police. I thought I had this, you know, great little information. I thought I might be able to help, you know, maybe solve the murder of my friend. So I would tell them, I said, hey, you know, I got no callbacks or anything like that. So this is kind of directly how, like, you know, what our so this kind of flashback is that this guy, Tamlin Tsarnaev, he was approached by the FBI because he was doing all this, you know, so-called online radicalization.
He was The older brother.
And so he was, you know, allegedly getting radicalized online. So the FBI talked to him or whatever, and then they let him go. And not only did they let him go or whatever but he wound up going to Dagestan, which is a former part of the USSR, that I think they've been having wars between the Islamic people in Dagestan and Chechnya have both been waging a war against Russia. So he was allowed to go to Dagestan and fight against the Russians. And I think his friend was murdered and something, and Russian intelligence actually contacted the U.S., said, hey, we got this terrorist, he's from your place, he's, you know, we think he's an Islamic radical, you might want to know about him. And the USA didn't do anything with that information.
And they already had a record on him because he had already been brought in.
Right, exactly. Yeah, they already had brought in, and Russia's telling the USA that this guy's an Islamic radical and he's, you know, an Al-Qaeda type or whatever. So even after that, his best friends are murdered on 9/11, the anniversary of 9/11, 10 years. Even someone would say it was like a Al-Qaeda scene. That's what the police report said. But they didn't make the connection in their database. Hey, this guy was murdered and his best friend is a radical Islamicist. You know, maybe we should talk to him. They didn't talk to him. And so I guess he went on and continued, and then he went on to the Boston bombing maybe a year later. A
year and change. So, or maybe less than a year.
Maybe less than a year because it was 2000. Yeah, the Boston bombing was 2012, right?
The marathon was, what, in October? So it was about...
No, it was 2013.
Yeah.
It was 2013. So it was a year and a half later, roughly. Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So and then the FBI wound up finding another one of his friends and they shot and killed him after he wrote a confession.
The friend.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. That's really crazy.
Yeah, it's all very crazy. It's a crazy story, and you know, and normally when you have murders, like, you know, I've had friends murdered in drug related crimes, and mostly they're black or Latino, but these were three, you know, two Jewish kids. One was the son of a rabbi. Went to Brandeis. Another, you know, he was a marijuana dealer, but he wasn't like your street dime bag selling guy. He was selling to like the rich and elite of Cambridge and
pushing Massachusetts. He was pushing weight.
Yeah, he was pushing high grade weight. Yeah, definitely. So that was very interesting, and like right now, like and this is before I really started doing research. So after, like, I've become so skeptical of like the FBI, and they did a lot of like entrapment of Muslims, so they can, you know, I don't know if you've seen the Nuremberg Sting, which is a really good documentary on HBO, but they will get an informant to get some, you know, Islamic people to try and make a terrorist attack, and they'll do all the planning themselves, and then they'll act like they stopped a big terror attack when it was them who kind of started it too. So it's all about kind of like getting headlines, and so a lot of stuff. I'm way more cynical about like the FBI and the CIA. Like definitely through the research I've been doing, like the FBI was definitely involved in the assassination of MLK, which is another story. Go so ahead. You know, J. Edgar Hoover was a horrible person.
Horrible human being.
Horrible human being. Definitely involved in the cover-up of the JFK assassination. Probably involved in the assassination of MLK. Definitely involved in like the COINTELPRO.
Oh my God!
Yeah.
So I saw a movie on basically the rise and the demise of the Black Panther Party, and it's all
Yeah.
J. Edgar Hoover just basically tore them apart, put them against each other. Let me ask you this. So with everything you've mentioned about what everything went down in Boston and how Russia was basically like, hey, U.S., we have this kind of radical Islamist who's one of your citizens. You got to do something. And now what's been going on since then and what's going on with Paris and how we see kind of a rejection, and even more of a rejection of refugees and Muslims. Like, what do you think the future holds for people of the Muslim faith? I was having a conversation with my barber yesterday.
Oh, it's hard. I think so. What has been happening for a while time, like if you go back, even the same book I was talking about, The Devil's Chessboard. So what happens is, what's been happening, it's been like, it's been the USA who's been started radical Islam. I mean, that you had a secular regime in Iran and it was overthrown and they installed a very religious regime with the Shah. So, and then even, when Afghanistan, when they were under Russia, they had a kind of secular regime and then they kind of installed like the Taliban. So because of you having all the and Saudi Arabia is kind of like the worst kind of culprit. And Saudi Arabia is definitely like Prince Bandar Bush. He was a former ambassador to the USA, very close to the Bush family. He Bandar was kind Bush. Of uh-huh. Yeah. He was kind of involved in like the start of ISIS. So
ISIS wasn't started through the Iraq War when they kind of.
It was I mean, through there's a few different ways. So ISIS, Iraq War created a kind of vacuum of power, and obviously led to a kind of need for a powerful organization, and ISIS kind of filled that gap. But even in Syria, where they really got their start, was Syria is kind of supported by the Russians. Americans don't like the Russians. Saudi Arabians don't like Iranians because you have the whole Sunni and Shia.
Right.
Kind of beef. So, you know, you have Israel, Saudi Arabia, and the USA all wanting to get rid of Assad. And then you have Iran and Russia who are allies with Assad. So they kind of want to keep him in. So originally, there's a lot of good, like, frontline documentaries. And even, you know, Vice has some good documentaries about, you know, how these Syrian rebels, and I think like the idea of like a moderate rebel, and I was like, no, we're not supporting ISIS. And there's pictures of John McCain with like ISIS's top dogs, and you know, so they were meeting with these guys, and it's the same mistakes they made in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
When you kind of support, it's like, let's support the Bloods to get the Crips. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah. And then you have control over the Bloods. You think you have control, and you don't.
You don't. So I'm a little anti-religion. So I would just rather have, you know, and there are a lot of, you know, negative aspects to, if you take any, you know, peace literally, and if you have hatred behind any religion, it's gonna be horrible. If it's Christianity, if it's Judaism, if it's
Christianity,
if it's Islam,
hate behind the Christianity was the KKK.
Yeah, and even before that, the Crusades, colonialism. You know, there's parts of the Bible where they justify slavery, and then, you know, Judaism, look what's going on in Israel against the Palestinians, and then, you know, in Saudi Arabia where they cut your head off for being gay or selling drugs, or cut your hands off if you shoplift.
Right.
So I think with what's going on in that, when these people are being, I think what Obama kind of says, when people are persecuted, they stick to their guns and their Bibles, and I think that's what's happening in the Middle East, is they're sticking to their Qurans and their guns. And so I don't know. I would really be on my John Lennon stuff and hope for like a lack of religion and a you know, universal spiritual peace, but. It's not really good or evil. So you can say like Islamic extremism is evil, and it is really bad. They're killing some people, you know, they behead people, but that doesn't mean that the USA and their drone killings are good. You know what I'm saying? So and that just creates more of it, because once you on your side show a lack of respect for innocent civilians, then they're going to have, their brothers and sisters are going to have a lack of respect for innocent civilians as well. So if we're killing, you know, thousands of innocent civilians through drone strikes, in their mind, they're justified killing thousands of innocent civilians through suicide bombs, through shootings, through whatever. So it's,
the thing that a lot of people don't see. Not that I am about what happened in Paris or Boston or 9/11 at all, but I mean 9/11 could have been, you know, perhaps maybe would have been an inside job, whatever. As a lot of people talk about,
I don't know.
Rosie O'Donnell got fired for mentioning that on The View.
Yeah, but, I know. Yeah. And Rosie O'Donnell, I heard a real good interview with her and Alec Baldwin, and she knows, like, she's up on, like, the JFK assassination like that. And, you know, I don't know. Like, that's why I'm not a conspiracy theorist, so I don't have a theory that I can say, yes, it was an inside job, and I can prove it, because I don't. And I wouldn't, I wouldn't go out on a limb and say that. But knowing what I know about, you know, the JFK assassination, Iran-Contra, and other things like that, is that the same people would they kill all these innocent people just to start a war? Yeah, they that's a possibility. Did they? I don't know.
Right.
But yeah. Sorry.
No, tangent. But the thing is, like, a lot of people aren't aware of kind of background information. They don't really follow the facts that there are drone strikes in, you know, in Pakistan and in Afghanistan. Even if you watch the show Homeland, which I, for the first time, I'm not watching this season. I've slowly been trying to pull away. I'm trying to pull the heroin out my veins. But you know, season four started where they're bombing a wedding in Pakistan, you know, just trying to get one person. And you create martyrs that way.
Exactly.
And then everything piled together with backdoor deals with larger governments. You just give people a lot of power. And those people aren't necessarily good people. A lot of them are evil. And yeah. With that being said, evil, I want to transition to something. New England Patriots, man. I want to jump back to sports real quick. So, I mean, you're a Boston sports fan, and I think
definitely big time.
Right now the most relevant Boston area team are the New England Patriots, even though I actually like what the Boston Celtics are doing.
Yeah, Marcus Smart's hurt, but yeah, they have a good solid team. I think they're following like the Spurs method of
The Celtics are my sleeper pick for doing really well this year. I think
your Knicks are doing good. Porzingis is
the Knicks are doing. I'm happy as hell, but I'm not. You know, I'm trying to set my expectations low for the Knicks. If Porzingis stays healthy and the Knicks finish 500, I'll be. You know, I should want more, but it's so early.
It's definitely. And, you know, with Lynn's sanity and a lot of stuff, I know, like, Knicks fans kind of get themselves up for disappointment.
This is different. This is different than Lynn's sanity.
Yeah, he's a 7'3", athletic, you know.
Latvian 20-year-old who could shoot threes. It's crazy.
But Jeremy Lin's actually kind of redeeming himself in Charlotte right now. I just saw an article posted.
No, I think he's playing well. I think he was always a decent player. I think Jeremy Lin in New York was never going to work because Carmelo Anthony's ego is too big, and that dude he's running the organization. But I think now New Yorkers at least see that Phil does have a plan. And even though, you know, part of it, I think he was lucky to land on Porzingis because I've heard that he was trying to trade that pick. And anyway, we ended up getting Porzingis. But right now, it's fun being a Knicks fan, man. They're exciting. They got this young dude who's doing all types of cool shit, taking game-winning threes, even though they don't count after the buzzer.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
He beasted. He beasted on the Rockets the other day, which was fun to see. But the Rockets are a mess. They fired your...
yeah, Kevin McHale.
Boston Yeesh. Hero. Yeah. But let's jump to these Patriots, man. They are clearly the favorite to win the Super Bowl. I'm hoping that it's them versus Carolina because I like watching Cam Newton play football.
Yeah, no, Cam is great. You know, I've always been like a fan of like black quarterbacks. So yeah, no, and that would be a great Super Bowl. Yeah, you never know. Everyone's always, you know, the Giants last, they made the 9-7. They made the Super Bowl last time when they beat us. So I think I would like to just beat the Giants again in the Super Bowl just to talk to New York. But no, I think Carolina would be definitely dangerous if hopefully the pass can be, you know, healthy and, you know, Edelman will be back. And it's too bad, you know, Deion Lewis was so great. I liked having him, but he's hurt. And, you know, Gronkowski stays healthy. You know, that I think that that fifth ring will solidify, you know, Brady is the greatest quarterback ever. And, you know, these Patriots is like, you know, one of the greatest dynasties ever. Bill Belichick is the greatest coach. So, you know, we're 9 games in, we're 10 games in. And,
yeah.
I hope so. You know, I don't want to count any chickens before they hatched. And I think the AFC doesn't look, especially, you know, with Denver and Peyton Manning not playing that well, as great as Denver's defense is.
I feel bad for Peyton Manning, man. I like Peyton Manning. I mean, look.
I never liked Peyton Manning.
I know you don't like him, but I don't like Tom Brady, but I could admit Tom Brady is, you know, arguably the best quarterback of all time.
Yeah.
But Peyton Manning is just like, you see him on these commercials, and you could tell it's like, yo, I wanna have a couple of beers with that guy. That guy.
I just got benched on my team. But no, but Denver still has a great defense. And, you know, Cincinnati, I don't know if they won last night.
They lost.
They lost. Okay, okay. Yeah. So Arizona might even be tough out the NFC. But no, it's very interesting being a Patriots fan because I remember that's one of my first sports memories was them losing to the Bears. And it was something like 52-3. And it was really embarrassing and hurtful. And there was a long period of time where Patriots weren't even contenders or did anything. And then I think, you know, Pete Carroll came in the 90s. We lost to Green Bay in the Super Bowl. I really became like a grown up. I think I had my own apartment and I was like and every Sunday I would just watch football. And like right when 2001, you know what I'm saying? So I was there when Mo Lewis knocked out Drew Bledsoe and injured him and Tom Brady came in, watched that whole series. And I think, you know, it was right after 9/11 and all this stuff. And it was, you know, it was a great story.
Patriotic Patriots.
Yeah, you know, and Tom Brady was this, you know, sixth round pick, and he came in, and he was this big hero, and I think the nation was kind of rooting for us.
A mutual friend of ours calls Tom Brady a great American hero.
Yep, I call him White Jesus, personally. But no, it was a really great moment watching 2001, and then even though those next two, and then I got the feeling of the bit of the hate like coming into, you know, 2008 series. So I even when Giants fans, you know, hate on me, I did make a deal before. I said, you know, if Barack Obama can beat Hillary Clinton, I will accept the Patriots losing. Like, that's more important. That's more important to the country. So I made that deal with God. If there is a God, I don't know. And so I made that deal with God in my head. And then that was, you know, it was a great game. And I think karma and, you know, that's the way sports kind of happens whenever you have, you know, it's good. For everyone else, it was good to see the underdog beat the overdog. Definitely not for me. Right. But then again, you know, we were that underdog. We beat the greatest show on turf when we beat the Rams with the, you know, sixth round backup. So, you know, we the underdog became the overdog. Right. Then when the Giants beat us next time, I think, you know, Gronkowski was hurt. And the Giants are honestly just a better team. And, you know, those good defense, the defense that can get to Brady is going to be. So that Super Bowl wasn't as – but then, yeah, this last Super Bowl was just incredible. That last interception was amazing by Malcolm Butler. And then this season's been great so far, so I hope so. I hope we can win another Super Bowl. That would be really great for sports. Be great for the Patriots.
Great for you guys. I don't believe in, like, oh, this person was hurt. I mean, all sports. I mean, it happens, you know.
Injuries are part of the game.
Injuries are part of the game. The last Super Bowl, Pete Carroll, he should have ran the ball, but, you know, it's part of the game. He made a mistake, and a great team like the Patriots is not going to...
I mean, I think if Russell Wilson kind of made the mistake more than Pete Carroll. I mean, if you watch the Patriots, like, you know, three out of five times, we're on the one of the two. We'll throw it to Gronkowski or we'll throw it to things. So it's, I think Pete Carroll got a bad rap for that. I think possibly, and this is me being like a real total cynic of and believing, is that the Patriots knew they were going to throw it, and they had Butler, and he jumped the route because that was so perfect. So, you know, people say Patriots are cheaters. I say, yeah, they probably are. Your team probably cheats too. You just cheat better than you. You know what I'm saying? Like,
we're the better cheaters.
We're the better cheaters. Yeah,
I thought Deflategate was such a waste of time. Like,
such a waste of time. I mean, everyone does it.
Yeah, I don't like the Patriots, but I was like, this is getting really.
But it was. I mean, it was great marketing by the NFL to keep people interested during the offseason and keep ratings on ESPN, you know what I'm saying, and hype up the season, hype up the Patriots, who are doing really great right now. So I think, you know, whatever, it's off-season stuff. I got people talk. Yeah, it was definitely BS. Like, I'm sure everyone does that a little, and that's, like, gosh.
No, I mean, it was a waste of time. But real quick, back to when the Giants stole your hearts. That first time, nobody expected, no one in New York expected to even...
Yeah, man, you guys were like 0-4. It started off bad, wound up 9-7.
But
wild
even
card.
When we made it to this, I mean, the Super Bowl
beat
run,
Green Bay was really good.
That
they
was
were
a
undefeated
that was
too,
a great
yeah.
game. I remember that game. Michael Strahan on that on the goal line. He had to get this one stop. He's pointing to his brain to everyone, being like, "It's a mental game." I remember that. But that Super Bowl against the Patriots, I really did not have any idea that we would win. And when we did, it was great. But for me, the second one was even better because I was working in Haiti at the time.
Oh, yeah.
For a Boston-based organization. And so many Boston people were there. And it was just, I was in Haiti. And it was just like home. Everything felt like home at that time. But, you guys are the clear favorites. I mean.
Yeah, I mean, we were the clear favorites before. So I'm definitely not taking anything for granted. And, you know, looking forward to the season. But if that does happen, that would just be, you know, so great for the city of Boston. So great for Patriot fans, and, you know, just because we've been through some bad years, so, you know, this is good for
some bad years. You guys, this would be your fifth Super Bowl.
No, but I'm talking between like 86 and like 2000. I'm talking about like the 90s until we got Drew Bledsoe. Yeah, we're like, you know,
I think Patriots fans, Celtics fans, and Red Sox fans and Bruins fans need to chill. You guys have had
definitely
a good 15 years.
Yeah, no, the 2000s have been great.
They've been fantastic for you guys. Like, you guys, there's no more feeling sorry for shit.
I mean, there were a whole reverse of the curse thing. I've never been a big, like, baseball or Red Sox fan. But, like, I definitely felt, you know, the pain of the city, the pain of my friends. So, you know, Bucky Dent and who's the other guy?
Bill Buckner. I went through his
legs. Yeah. Bill Buckner. But no, one of the few times I did watch was the 2004 series against the Yankees. Like, I almost forget. Like, you would think that was the World Series because that was like the most amount of time. There's such a great 30-for-30 on that too. But I do remember. So I think it was, you know, I think it was maybe game four, and we're down. And then I was like, yo, because I'm not a baseball fan. So I was like, all right, I'm going to watch this Bob Marley because I have my computer and my TV right next to each other. So I'm like, I'm going to watch this Bob Marley concert. I'm going to turn down the volume. All my friends were over my house, you know, because, you know, I had my own place and they were all watching the game. I wasn't really interested. So right when the Red Sox started coming back, No Woman, No Cry came out. And then you saw all these almost crying people in the stands. And then Bob was saying, everything's going to be all right. Everything's going to be all right. And then, you know, came back and went. So that's probably my favorite baseball memory. Not even winning the World Series, but beating the Yankees before the World Series in 2004.
Oh, that's fair.
Yeah.
But listen, Casey, thanks a lot for coming on.
Okay, yeah, thanks, Joel. Great, great. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the podcast. Keep me posted on when it's up.
Yeah, yeah, I will let you know when it's posted. Do you have anything you want to plug right now?
Oh, yes, 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 I do. Thank you so much. So, yeah, definitely Inside the CIA Secret War in Jamaica, which I touched on a little bit. We'll be out on February 6th on Over the Edge Books. And I think I might even have an album because I've recorded a lot of music. I only released one album, and the reason I didn't release a second album is just I never had enough music for an album because I'm not like a manic recorder. I'm not like a Tupac. Like I record out of the vibe, but I do have 10 really good songs that have been took me 10 years to record. So I think that might come out on February 6th too. Don't have a title for it right now. I just really, just relaunched my label Phoenix Rising Records, changed the records, distributed to Sony. Right now we have the Just the Facts and Blue Buttons album, Blue Hues of Science, which is doing really good in terms of streaming, but you could also buy the album on iTunes, Amazon, and then YouTube has a new streaming music service. It's doing really good on YouTube's new streaming music service. I think it's YouTube Red. So, stream it, buy it, all that, all those add up. It's doing really well. It's a really good album. It's a really great production, great lyrics. I'm on 4 songs. So that's out now. So, yeah. And then MVGen, which is a music video generator created by John Lee, who was the first black person on the cover of Wired. So what it does is if you would like a music video, you just type in some keywords and you upload your music, and then the website will find GIFs that match your keywords and will edit them to a music video. So you can make a music video in 5 minutes. So if you have a happy music video, happy visuals, dancing, partying, drugs, violence, sex, whatever you want, peace, love, whatever, whatever fits the theme of your video. So that's mvgen.com, mvgen.com. And yeah, that's about it.
Cool, man. Do you have a Twitter handle you want to share with folks?
Yeah, yeah. Casey Gane, which is also my Instagram. CaseyGane.
All right, man. Good looking out. Thanks for coming on. You could check us out on MI83 Facebook page. Check me out on Twitter, Joey25. That's my hashtag on Twitter. Enjoy time with your family, and hopefully these will be up so you guys can listen to it on the car ride to wherever you're going. Case, we'll have you again soon, I hope.
Definitely, definitely. I'd like to come on maybe February when the book's out, and you should definitely go deeper into that. Yep, yep, yep.
Definitely, man.
And hopefully, I'll be able to talk about the Patriots Super Bowl too.
maybe, hopefully not. But you know what? I have no more hate. I just do hope that.
I'd hate on the Giants too. Don't worry about it.
Thanks for coming on, man.
All right.
Hey, yo, my man Fife Diggy, he got something to say.
I like him brown, yellow, Puerto Rican, and Haitian. Name is Fife Dog from the Zulu Nation. So you're in the jam that we can get down. Now let's not the boost like the group.